Back to the Future in Italy.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. European markets are slumping this morning on news that the Prime Minister of Italy will resign. Mario Monti, whose technocratic government took power a year ago to fix the Italian economy, says he'll step down as soon as next year's budget gets approved. And wait till you hear who might replace him. The BBC's Alan Johnston joins us from Rome. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, how big of a surprise was this announcement that Mario Monti is going to resign, and why is he doing it?
Well, we got a sense of gathering political crisis just in the middle of last week when it became clear that the former Prime Minister's party, the party of Silvio Berlusconi, was going to withdraw its support from Mr. Monti's government. And after that, the Monti government looked very fragile, really. And on Saturday evening, night of drama, Mr. Monti went to the presidential palace and said he could no longer govern. So Italy is now on course for elections which will come slightly earlier than we expected.
Well, what's been the economic legacy in Italy of Mario Monti?
Well, go back a year when he took charge and Italy was, in financial terms, in utter disarray. And this very experienced economics professor and his team of like-minded technocrats, experts, took over, and they did manage to steady the ship in those terms. They began to pull Italy back from the abyss, and he began putting in place reforms, pensions, austerity measures. The question is how much of that kind of work will continue in the hands of the politicians who will return after the election.
Now, is it really possible that the eternal Prime Minister, Silvio Berlusconi, might retake power there in the Eternal City?
Well, he stepped right back into the fight, confirming over the weekend that he would indeed lead his party into this electoral battle. But he is not the force that he once was politically. Many Italians, sick of the old familiar faces like Mr. Berlusconi's at the top of the political tree here. All the same, though, he has vast financial resources. His media news empire will fall in behind him. And it can be a mistake to underestimate Silvio Berlusconi.
The BBC's Alan Johnston in Rome. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much.
Well, news this morning of increased energy consumption in China sent oil prices higher, which is more good news for places like North Dakota, where oil production is booming. Of course, there is still no pipeline to move the oil, which is causing a boom for another industry, railroads. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Troe reports.
Railroads have played a big role in the hydraulic fracturing boom,
bringing the sand in and then taking the oil out.
Bill Renicki follows the rail industry at consulting firm Oliver Wyman. Big orders for tanker cars and locomotives have followed the shale oil game. The railroads haven't had any problem keeping up so far.
The rail system has a lot more capacity than it uses on any given day.
Plus, there have been more trains free to head north for oil due to a slowdown in coal. Coal's been the mainstay of U.S. freight rail. The coal industry hit a slump as fracking took off. Pipelines would be much more efficient than trains, and they'll come, says energy analyst Stephen Schork. But for now, rail has one big benefit: flexibility.
So if you go ahead and build a pipeline, well, you're locked in. That pipeline is going to connect to a market. You have to make sure that market will be able to sustain in the years ahead.
Right now, trains from North Dakota take oil to the east, west, and Gulf coasts. Oil companies aren't yet sure which of those will need the most oil long term. I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading this morning, up 0.4% in Hong Kong, down 0.6% right now in Frankfurt. On Wall Street Friday, the Dow added 81 points to close at 13,155.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
Well, there is still a glut of foreclosed houses on the market, but that's not ordinary home buyers benefit from this. It's big private investors who are scooping up houses and turning them into rental properties. Marketplace's David Weinberg reports.
Jonathan Scheidler is a realtor in California. Lately, he gets at least one call every day from a hedge fund manager who wants to buy single-family houses in bulk.
They're buying them like instruments, which is fine and dandy. But what's different about these instruments is that people live in them. You put a key inside of it, you walk inside, and you get naked inside of it, kind of thing. So it makes it a little more personal.
Wall Street has been investing in residential housing for decades. What is new is the scale of these new purchases. Hedge funds are buying thousands of single-family houses around the country, especially in states hardest hit by the housing crash, like California.
This is a 1,200-square-foot, three-bedroom, two-bath house with a detached two-car garage. It's the gold standard of entry-level homes.
Bill O'Rafferty flips houses in Riverside, California. He took me on a tour of a house he just remodeled. This is the type of home that hedge funds are snapping up.
I listed this home on a Friday. By Monday, I had 17 offers.
Those offers come from two types of buyers: investors looking to turn a profit and families looking to get a piece of the American dream. These days, O'Rafferty almost always sells to the investor.
Now, do I want everybody to live in harmony and have a house and be peaceful and love their family? Yes. But at some point, Bill has to make a living.
First-time buyers simply can't compete with the investors offering cash, some of whom are buying properties above retail cost. And investors don't have to worry about their credit score.
That's another factor. The fact that literally half of the people today who apply for a mortgage to buy a home don't get it.
Steve Cook is the managing editor of Real Estate Economy Watch. He says a first-time buyer needs a FICO score of 750 to qualify for a loan.
And those are high hurdles for many people to achieve. So lending standards were tightened as a result of the housing crash, and for good reason. But the result is they haven't loosened at all.
Another reason fewer houses are on the market: banks are doing more loan modification to avoid litigation, and the Obama administration's $75 billion loan modification program has more troubled homeowners staying in their houses. I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
And finally, all those company holiday parties could be costing us when it comes to worker productivity. The Telegraph newspaper reports that in the UK, about a fifth of all employees call in sick or show up late to work the day after the office party. And one in 10 admit to doing something they regretted the night before. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. On APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.